The Lord says very loudly in the last portion of Bhagavad Gita, 1866, Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami masuchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Thus the Lord takes all responsibility for one who surrenders under him, and he indemnifies such a person against all reactions of sin. So this is not a well understood verse. It means the surrender part is understood. But this aspect of abandon all varieties of religion. So religion is for the people follow religion out of fear of sinful reaction. That if they don't follow the religion, then they'll go to hell. And they want to be prosperous, so therefore, by following a religion, things become prosperous. They get whatever material benefit comes, and sin goes away. So this is what people want. They want the sin to go, and they want the prosperity to come. So here, Krishna is saying, you abandon these religions, because these are religion is being followed simply for that purpose. We're worried about material reactions, and we want material gain. So, therefore, that should be given up. That should not be followed. So, one should just surrender to him. Now, he says, surrender, that's the best. Just surrender and become a pure, unalloyed devotee. If you can't do that, then follow sadhana. And if you can't do that, then follow dharma. But this is not regular dharma. Dharma is to be given up, but what is to be followed is sad-dharma. So this sad-dharma is dharma that is meant to, the result that you are going to get is sat, is Krishna. And what it will get rid of is material gain, material desire, material activity, material pursuit. So we see it looks, material dharma looks similar to the spiritual dharma. Like that, to sad-dharma. And it does basically the same thing. You gain something and you gain something you want and you get rid of something you don't want. So on the material platform, you get rid of bad materiality and you gain good materiality. You know, at least what people say is good and what people say is bad, you know. Like that, being boiled in a pot of oil, they would consider bad. And going to the heavenly planets, they would consider good. You know. So, but the spiritual sat-dharma has the same kind of purpose, but it doesn't work in this way. What it gets rid of is, the bad thing is material life. Any aspect of it, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, that's all gotten rid of. And the gain is spiritual life, the life with Krishna in the spiritual world. Right? So rasa is there. You get rid of those things that are going to give bad rasa, means the material world, and you gain what will give proper rasa, that's the spiritual world. While material dharma means it will get rid of mundane or material, the aspects of rasa that are bad. You know, it means all fear and horror and terror, all these things will go away. And one will get all kinds of nice things, you know, nice enjoyments with other people. So we see it looks similar, but the material is the reflection of the original. So this material dharma is to be given up, and Krishna is to be accepted. And then, according to your platform of advancement, then you can surrender to Krishna either directly or through sadhana or through dharma, right? Religious duties or the varnashram system. But this sadhana and this varnashram are not like other sadhana and varnashram. This sadhana, Krishna is the center. This varnashram, Krishna is the center. So it's a subtle point. Because otherwise, if we just accept Krishna and Krishna's philosophy, but there's no dharma, it's mental speculation. It's actually the situation of the impersonalist. One is trying to engage the impersonal path in Krishna's service. Right? But it's a little difficult because it's not complete. Right? There's no culture to interface with others. There isn't. There's no possibility for economic development, for sense gratification, for interaction with family members or community or that. The path of jnana doesn't have that. There's only moksha. Right? And the material concept of moksha, there is no dharma. Right? So it's got philosophy, but no religion. So Prabhupada says this is mental speculation. It won't purify you, and it gives no rasa. So not very useful. But we see, generally, this is what people take. This is what Arjuna was going to do. He was going to kick out the religion and just take the philosophy. And then the other is you accept the religion and you reject the philosophy. So you follow the religion, but your goal is not to go back to Godhead. Then it becomes sentiment. Right? So you see, generally in this material world, you get these two practices of so-called, you know, uplifting processes. One is it's just a set of rules and there's sentiment, but there's no philosophy. That's all. The sentiment is enough. If you feel something in your heart, that's enough. Because people, that's what people want. They want to feel something in the heart. That's their motive for doing something. So it's either the senses are meeting sense objects, that pleases the mind, or mind is meeting some other aspect of mind, so the mind is happy. But actually, until the mind meets Krishna, it can't be satisfied. So this lower aspect of religion is useless. And then if you take the higher, you take the philosophy, and to get out of the material world, but you drop rasa, or interaction with other people, then where's the taste for the living entity? So both are faulty. But generally we see this is what is done. And we're saying this, we're not meaning all the dirty, filthy, stinky karmis. I'm only talking about devotees here. You can relate it to the karmis. You know, you have your born-again Christians, very sentimental, no philosophy. You know? And then you have your people who follow, you know, the impersonal path. They have some philosophy, but they have no religious process. They have no lifestyle. Right? Some who follow the Vedic culture, they have something left over. Even though they're following the impersonal path, they'll follow the Vedic lifestyle for a renuncia. So some culture is there. And then some interaction. So therefore you see these more proper swamis, then they interact with people and people are happy. But on your Western front, they've no philosophy. They don't interact with anyone at all. Right? So therefore, then no one's interested. Who will follow? So as devotees, we have to be careful of these two. Right? We have to be careful. You want to interact with other people. You want to go to a cave, then don't worry about it. But if you're going to stay in the association of devotees and interact, on what basis is that interaction going to happen? How are you going to greet devotees? How are you going to say, you know, that they're leaving and, you know, going somewhere else or you're leaving? How are you going to do that? How are you going to invite them to wherever you are? Or how are you going to go to their place? How are you going to eat? How are you going to... What is the interaction? What will it be based on? Right? Can't be based on the air. You have to have something proper. So what is that? Right? Just what the Indians follow now? That's good enough. What my village, what we did in India, is that good enough? Or what the city people in India do, that's good enough? Right? You come to the temple and a little bit put your hand on your head and close your eyes and, you know, great religious experience for about 3 nanoseconds before off to the business. I mean, you have that, or in the village, then so many ideas are there, and it must be very tough, and this and that, and so many things, really taken, really, really anything ritual must be so hard and rough and that it must be, painful and disturbing and terrible, and it must be ugra, like that. Like sometimes devotees, like coming up, this is a popular place for some of these ugra vratas. Vrindavan. You have Kartik, and at the end of Kartik you have 5 days, Bhishma Panchak. So what it is it's like Bhima couldn't follow Ekadasi. He ate so much. Fasting for him was like an impossibility. But Ekadasi is very important. So Krishna said, okay, one day you just do Nirjal, and that'll take care of the rest of it. One day. Right? So Bhishma Panchak is a similar thing. You can't do the whole Chaturmas, or you can't do the Kartik Vrata. So for 5 days, you follow whatever normal Vratas, normal Kartik Vratas or Chaturmas Vratas are there. You don't make up your own Vrata. I'll stand on my head for 5 days, or like this. But devotees make up, I heard one devotee fasted from water, Nirjal, 5 days. Nowhere in any Shastra would that be allowed. Never. You can die if you don't drink water for 3 days. Even the karmis will say that. 3 days, you could be dead from not drinking water. Fortunately here, it's not so hot and stuff, so he survived. But it's like, I'm going to do a vrata, it has to be so strong and so terrible. But what has it got to do with Krishna? Okay, it's the sincerity is there that you want to do something serious. But where does it come from? Which shastra? What is it you just took? Okay, Nirjal, but that's an Ekadasi thing. There is no Nirjal in Chaturmas. There's not one vrata that is Nirjal. There's a vrata that says you restrict your water that only every 6 hours you drink, but it doesn't say how much you drink. You get up in the morning, you drink water, then for 6 hours you don't drink. That way, in between, then there's some regulations sitting. Otherwise, you're always drinking, then you're always going to the bathroom, then there's no regulation. So every 6 hours, no vrata, not one, no shastra, nowhere is there a vrata. But we make it up. Where does it come from? Right? Another good one, I think this came from the Bengalis, is 5 days means five substances of the Panchagavya. Right? There's no vrata like that, nowhere explained, nowhere, nothing. Right? It may be somebody's tradition somewhere in some Bengali village, but it's nothing to do with. Panchagavya is a chemical combination of the five parts of the cow mixed backwards. Then you get Panchagavya. Right? If it's going to be used for sprinkling or eating, then it has to be done that you take the cow dung and mix it into the cow urine. When it's completely mixed, then you take that mixture, put it into the yogurt. Completely mix it. When it's mixed, then you put it into the ghee. Then completely mix it. Then put that into the milk. You do that, then it won't curdle. Otherwise, it'll curdle. You put cow urine into milk, it'll curdle. Then you don't have milk. It's not Panchagavya. Right? That's Panchagavya. This is how it's used in the Pancharatra and in the Veda. That's Panchagavya. Or we're doing a Panchagavya Abhishek. Yes, we're using the five things. But they're all together. Right? Like if I invite you to my house, I want you to come for a meal, a full meal. Like not a snack, a full meal. And then you come, yes, today I give you the shukta. And then you say, anything else? Yes, tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll give you the rice and dal. Oh, okay, then you come. Then the next day they'll give you the cheese subject. Oh, okay, great. And then come tomorrow, I'll give you the chutney. And then the next day will be the sweet. You can't call that a meal. It's not. It may look like five things. Like today I drank some milk. After 2 weeks I drank some yogurt. I had a lassi. And then, 3 weeks later I put a lot of ghee on my rice. Like that. And then the doctor told me my liver wasn't good. So he told me for, 1 week to drink some cow urine. And then, and then like this. Stretched over the year. And then I said, yes, I took Panchagavya. Very austere. For 1 year I took Panchagavya. You can't call it. So where do they come from? We make them up. It's just, that's the problem. We have to fall, otherwise we'll make up. Not that there's tons of things. Tons of things devotees do. You know, tons of things. Another good one is the bath after eating, right? Devotees don't wash their feet after going to the bathroom. But they're so strict that when they go on the altar, they have to take a bath, even if they've just eaten. Shastra doesn't mention that. Nowhere it mentions that. You take a bath in the morning, at noon, and in the evening. If you've gone to the toilet, means you pass stool, yes, then you take a bath. Eating, you don't have to take a bath. It's never allowed. Ayurveda wouldn't allow you to take a bath after eating. But we're very strict in our temple. I remember telling one devotee that this is not the process. He says, well, that's your opinion, but we're very strict. It's like, where'd you get your strictness from? What shastra? Quote it. Go ahead. Yes, let's hear it. No, we're very strict. So what? What is strict on what? Strict on Kaitava Dharma. You made your own Dharma up and you're very strict about it. No. If the rule is the clothes you're going to wear to do puja, don't eat in those clothes. So you're doing puja, and then it's time for breakfast. Take off your puja clothes, put on some other clothes, eat breakfast, wash your hands, mouth, and feet. And then, you know, whenever your next puja is, then you put your puja clothes back on and go on the altar. That's the rule. That's the tradition. That's how it's followed in Pancharatra. And our system is based on Pancharatra. It's also how it's followed in the Veda. But we make these things up. But something as ordinary as washing our feet after we go into the toilet, that we don't have to do. That's fanatic, Prabhu. You know, we don't follow all this Indian stuff, you know. We follow what Prabhupada said, right? I think Prabhupada did say hands, mouth, and feet, but whatever. I guess that was, you know, for ancient times, you know, 20 years ago. You know, like a computer. After 6 months, you know, today's cutting-edge computer, after 6 months, becomes a brontosaurus. Like that, you know, some kind of dinosaur. So the same thing, 20 years ago, okay, when they were hippies, and it was the time, then you could wash your feet. Nowadays, we've tried. We've turned the tap on, and it doesn't go on our feet. A strange mystic thing happened. It goes somewhere else. So we can't wash our feet in this age. You know, we have to be practical. You know, especially when we don't have a tap in the bathroom to wash our feet. You know? And of course, we're not so fired up that we stick our feet in the sink like we used to do in the 70s. You know, because we're more mature and not so fanatic nowadays. So therefore, we're more mature and balanced. We don't wash our feet. So we go in the bathroom and then track the contamination all over the temple room, deity room, everything. And that's fine. Right? Because that is Dharma, but we don't want to follow it. Right? So that Dharma will give up. But what we make up ourselves, man-made Dharma, oh, that we're very strict about. Very strict. But God-made Dharma, that's a matter of discussion. That's a matter of discussion. So first of all, as all these man-made things are thrown out, then Krishna's even saying, throw out the religion that I've given for the materialists. Right? What I've given for the materialists, that's also thrown out. The demigod worship and going to the Brahman or going to Pitri Loka or wherever you want to go. Throw that also out. So what's left? Just the Dharma that Krishna gives. Just the Dharma that Krishna gives. What, for what purpose? Going back to Godhead. That much we keep, and the rest of it we throw. The rest of it we throw. So this is a meaning, sarva dharmam parityaja. We don't make up our own. We do strictly what the acharyas give us. Because that will take us back to Godhead. The others won't. It's nice. The sentiment is good, and Krishna will appreciate that we want to do something very pakka and strict. But then better do what Krishna likes. Right? Otherwise, then it becomes what's called aropya bhakti. Aropya means we project, you know, what we like onto devotional service. You know? Like we like, you know, the typical thing is we like Western cooking. You know, or Italian cooking. So therefore, we cook that and we offer that to Krishna. So that's things we like. So we do that. Aropya, it's nice. At least it's things that we consider good. We're offering what we consider best to Krishna. So it's good. But the real thing is, what does Krishna want? What is Krishna, what will he be satisfied with? So that then, that takes us to that higher realm of dharma. So this dharma that is given up, then you surrender unto Krishna. So this is we're talking from the conditioned platform. Then if you want to take it beyond the conditioned platform, then when one comes to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, then yes, even those religious aspects of sad-dharma that are dealing with the conditioned nature, the gross and subtle body, even those are thrown out. Those are also given up. Right? The gopis gave up all their duties in their house and all these different things. When they went to the rasa dance, then Krishna started talking all very nice dharma. Oh, you're young girls, you're out here unprotected, in the middle of night you've come, and so many tigers and other dangerous animals here, and you know your husbands must be looking for you, and your sons and other relatives, and you know you have your duties there, so why don't you go back? So he started talking this dharma. Though in the conditioned state it's used in Krishna's service, but in the advanced state it gets in the way. But that's after Brahma-Bhuta, not before. So then in that state, we give that up. So the gopis, then they had to give that up. And they said, you know, hey, wait a minute. We've given up everything to come and surrender to you. You can't turn us back. So then Krishna could see they're fixed in this, that the ultimate dharma is surrender to Krishna. Right? So when we can do that, then sadhana and varnashram can be thrown out. But, and if we're conditioned, they've been thrown out. But because the purpose is to surrender to Krishna, and we're conditioned, we can't just fully surrender. We have to engage the gross and subtle body. Therefore, we accept sadhana and we accept the varnashram. How much is necessary to take us back, help us go back to Godhead, to purify us? That much. Just like karma. Krishna, when you take up devotional service, he throws out your karma. There is no karma. Right? He's already taken. Aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami sachit masacha. He's taken it. Right? The papa is gone. Moksha is there. It's mentioned. Right? All these nice words that everyone's looking for are mentioned. It's already removed. You don't have to worry. It's gone. But for your own good and training, to get rid of your conditioned nature, things that look like your karma are applied on you. So in the same way, is the dharma is thrown out. Full surrender to Krishna is what we're doing. But because the conditioned nature needs purifying, therefore then we take from the sadhana, the acharyas take from sadhana and from the varnashram, what is useful to purify our conditioned state. And then brings us to that transcendental platform. Then even those can be thrown out because full surrender is what we want. Yeah, mam ekam sharanam. We want that, just focus on Krishna. But since we're not focused on Krishna, the mind, the senses, then we give it according to Krishna's direction. Does this make some sense? It's a subtle point. It's been thrown out, but in pursuing surrender, we have to have certain aspects. But they're not coming from the normal aspects of karma and jnana. Now they're coming from sad-dharma. Right, as given by the acharyas. Therefore, the full body of dharma is not important. Just what of dharma is useful is taken, and everything else is left. Any questions on this? Or yes.
We are practicing our spiritual
life.
Yes. We are not going for Mangala Arati and we are not chanting 15 rounds.
Means, point is that when you take the material things and they touch Krishna, then they become spiritual. Right? It's just like you go to the market and buy some potatoes, and you also buy a pot. You go down and buy a gas cylinder and a stove, a few spoons, some spices. Are those spiritual? What you bought? It's a fully, you know, Satchitananda, you know, gas cylinder. Right? No, they're all material. Then we take that vegetables and we cut it and we do all these things and we put it in the pot and put it on the fire and cook it. And then we offer it to Krishna. Then Krishna eats it and then he replaces it. Then it's spiritual. So was that marketing and that cooking for the purpose of pleasing Krishna spiritual? The elements were all material. Our body is material, mind's material, our intelligence is material, senses. But is it called spiritual? Because it's touched Krishna, it's called spiritual. Now, if you go to the same market, buy the same things, cook it, and don't offer it to Krishna, then it's material. So what its goal is, then has that influence. It has to be empowered. Otherwise, then the book, it's made out of wood fiber, right? And they put some ink on it, it's printed in the material machine. But because these words are empowered with the chit potency, therefore it's a spiritual book. And if you read it, you get spiritual benefit. You also get infected with that chit potency. And someone then reads that and speaks that, even though it's material, the material sound vibration, material tongue, material ear, material brain, digesting it. But the chit potency is there. Therefore, it changes the heart. You know, just like an electric wire is not electricity. But you put electricity in it, and it's electrified, you know? Or Prabhupada gives the typical example is iron and fire. Iron is not fire, but when you put it in the association of fire, it acts as good as fire. You can't not call it fire. So that's the thing. When it touches Krishna, you know, with authority, under the authority of the Acharya and everything, then it becomes spiritual. And it becomes spiritual. So that's why all the sadhana and everything is spiritual. Otherwise, we take a bath, right? What was so spiritual? That the water was something special? Or, you know, rubbing the body is a spiritual activity? Or, you know what I'm saying? Or the dhoti, it's made out of some spiritual elements? Or no, because we're wearing a particular kinds of clothes that Krishna appreciates. And we're taking a bath in a way and at a time and for a purpose that Krishna appreciates, then it's called spiritual. So that is the point, is that the Dharma that I'm doing this because this is the pious thing to do, and by doing this then I won't go to hell and my forefathers will be pleased and I'll be elevated to the heavenly planets. That's thrown out. So that's thrown out. What's kept is that Krishna likes me to bathe at this time, dress like this, and come to the Mangal Arati and offer obeisances and ring the bell and say jai and all these different things. So then that is called sad-dharma. So dharma is thrown out, but sad-dharma is not thrown out. So this is the thing, one has to understand the difference between the two. So one has to know what's transcendental and what's dharma. Then one can understand when dharma is touched by sat, that becomes sat dharma. And those things that aren't touched by sat are just dharma. Then the devotee can differentiate between which is important and which is not. Otherwise the tendency is you get niyamagraha. Is it's either followed because, you know, this is the way it is, the shastra says it, or we throw it out. But if we throw it out, we will make up our own. We'll make up our own.
So Prabhupada said, if we have a personal ambition in the movement, then we should destroy the movement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you have a personal ambition, it will destroy things. But if you have a particular nature, and you engage that in Krishna's service, then that's beneficial. So you like to do a certain thing for Krishna, like you like to sing. So therefore you sing for Krishna. But if your ambition is to become the best singer in the movement, you know, and you'll get recognized for that, then that's a problem. That'll destroy everything. But if you are a singer, then, and you use that to sing for Krishna, then that's your ticket back to Godhead. Like that. Is whatever, you take anything and use it for Krishna, then it's like that iron being put in the fire, it becomes fire. So that will take you back to Godhead.
It's still up to name and fame and...
Yeah. No, this, these things have to be... These have to be given up. These have to be given up. The weeds. Aropya. In everything, yeah. No. Aropya basically is a platform of the Kanista, basically, that's their platform of service. Is that they project something onto the Lord. So according to their taste and like, they do. See, this individuality is always there. So within the Vedic system, there's so much variety. Like you take a piece of cloth, a chadar. You can put it on in so many ways. You know, there may be 10, 15 ways you can wear a chadar. But the principle is chadar has to be there. How you wear it, then according to the various... And within this system, then there's so much variety. Outside that, you know, you wouldn't tie the chadar around your leg unless you're a gopi going to the rasa dance. Then it's allowed. But if you're not a gopi going to the rasa dance, then it's generally worn on the upper part of the body. Like that. So it has its ways, traditional ways it's used. Within that, then there's individuality how you want to do. Like the cooking means how you use the spicing. Certain spices go with certain vegetables and certain preparations. But how much you put, what combinations you make, like that, it's unlimited. Radharani cooks and it's never the same. It's always some little subtle difference. So, but that's within the system. So aropya means you're taking things from outside the system and bringing them into the system. Like that. So you kind of like project those onto the system. Because it's from the mind. The mind thinks it's good and so it projects it onto the system. So in the beginning, that's not bad. It's point is that the whole idea is that we want the best for ourselves, and we make the best endeavor to get the best result for ourselves. So now, if we do that for Krishna, so even if it's in the realm of what we only consider best, and the way to get it is how we consider the best, then that's okay. Krishna will accept it. It's not the best, but it's acceptable. Right? Just like a small child may do anything and it's accepted. Right? They do all kinds of funny things. Right? Krishna is coming out to do some big business, right? He's big enough to walk and all that, and he sees the fruit lady outside. So he's a Vaishya and he's gonna go out and do some serious bargaining. So he grabs a handful of grains, right? You know, a small kid can't grab many grains. And little kids aren't really attentive to many details other than, you know, what goes into the mouth. Other things are kind of like quite secondary, you know. So then he goes out, and while he's coming out to do big business, he's dropping all the grains. So when he gets there, maybe he has, you know, 1, 2, 3 grains, and he gives that to the lady, you know, and expects to get something for that. Now, if an adult came out with 3 grains, the lady look at him and says, is this a joke? Or is this an insult or something? You think my mangoes are so bad that it's worth 3 grains? No, but a kid comes just that he's making that endeavor to do this whole system that the adults do, even though he's not able to do it, then it's accepted. Right? And not only that, he gets a better result, right? You know, the adult maximum they might get is a rotten mango thrown in their face, right? But here Krishna gets how many mangoes that you can stick hold in his arms? Like that. So that's the thing, is that in the beginning, if the sincerity is there, the purity is there, then it's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's accepted. Therefore, Krishna says, whatever you do, just do it for me. After he's told so many things about, you know, the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance, and then how the activities in goodness are the best, and so those activities should be used in his service like that. But he says, but even those who are inferior, if they're done for him, he'll accept it. But that means that that sincerity and humility and simplicity, gentleness, all those should be there. Now, if you become proud of it, yes, you know, we do business with, you know, one grain of rice, you know, then it's like, you know, we're not interested. The pride ruins the whole thing. If it'll ruin it for the gopis, who are on the topmost platform of devotional service, why it won't ruin it for a neophyte? So if we're proud of it, no, here we're doing our best. We don't really know better. It to us, it is good. You know, it is good for us. We have no flowers. There is no money. And next door over that wall there in the cemetery, there's some really great flowers. They just put, you know, these nonsense people put all these nice flowers on these, you know, gravestones, you know, for nonsense purposes. So we'll go liberate the flowers and bring them to Krishna. Right? So if that's all you know, one is by nature, you know, a tribal and a thief. One doesn't know what is purity. One doesn't know that graveyards are haunted by ghosts and they're impure. So anything that goes there is unofferable. Right? But because you don't know that and you think, here's nice flowers, we want to offer nice flowers to Krishna, we don't have. So we go and take these, you know, when no one's looking, and offer them to Krishna. Krishna will accept those as nectar. But if you start saying, no, this is good, this is the way to do it, you know, we have money, but no, we will steal the flowers from this graveyard because that's what we used to do when Prabhupada was here. Prabhu. You know, then Krishna may not appreciate it so much. And if you really sincerely think this is the real offering, okay, but then let's see you, you know, do that for other things also, you know. Like that. So then it loses its purity. Like, child is innocent, therefore it's nice. But when the innocence is lost, the form doesn't follow. It's the mood that's important. The form follows the mood, not the mood the form. Right? Means the form is to create a mood if you don't have a mood. But why that rule is there is because there's an original mood, and then from that mood, then they develop the form. But in the material world, we don't have the original mood, so we follow the form, and by that we'll invoke the original mood. So we reverse the process, right? We have a reflection, you know, from up it's gone down, so then we have to go from down to up. So therefore, it's backwards. So then whatever, it's applied anywhere. So even in Dharma, we think this is good, so I'll offer this. Krishna may or may not really appreciate that. But it's there, your family does like this, it's our tradition, and like that. So okay, it's pious, it's according to the scriptures, but Krishna may actually like something else. You know, like your family, you do all kinds of, you know, technical Vaikuntha worship. So then you'd worship Krishna with all the Vaikuntha worship. You'd rather actually have a little bit more simple form. You know? You don't need as much mudra and nyas and all these things. But in the beginning, he's happy with it. Because this is what you know. It's your tradition. You're following it. So you're putting it there. But Krishna accepts it. You know? So like that. So it may come from, generally for us, it means it's coming from Western cultural, you know, ideas, and then we're adding them in devotional service, you know, like, you know, canned tomato paste goes in everything, you know, like that, and you know, it's important. Like this, when you cook for Krishna, this is the rule. There must be two sabjis. One must be white with, you know, cream cheese or sour cream, and the other must be red with canned tomato sauce. Right? Then that is paka, right? Rice also, plain white rice, that's a weird thing that they do in India, like that. For the West, which is opulent and knows the higher values of life, plain rice cannot be offered. Have to at least minimum put some turmeric in it, some peas, some canned corn. You know, something must be in it. You cannot, plain rice is low class, right? It may be basmati, you may put ghee on it. You know, all the other sampradayas and shastras may say it's bona fide, but according to the Western Panta, it's bogus, like that. So these are aropya. These are aropya. We just project it on them. But Krishna doesn't mind, because he's not eating the rice or the other things. He's accepting the devotion. So as long as the devotion is there, he accepts it. But when those pride and other things come in the heart, then where's the devotion? Therefore, what is Krishna going to accept? So neither is it his kind of food, and neither does it have any devotion. So then, therefore, you know, who eats at the temple anymore? Right? So that's it. Does that make some sense? So it's coming from that, or it's coming from either traditional Vedic culture that's actually connected with things that are not important for devotional service, you know, demigod worship and other things like that. Or it's like the modern Hinduism where you just make it up as you go. It kind of looks, you take something from here and there and put it together into a nice cocktail, and then you have a nice... So any of these where it's kind of like either you make it up, either from non-Vedic or Vedic elements, or you don't fully understand the application. So then all this is projected. Does that make some sense?
You know, this worship of demigods is also recommended in this Vedic scriptures.
Huh.
You know, but the demigods cannot deliver us from this cycle of birth in this material world. And why is that, is the worship of demigods?
Why is demigod worship recommended in the Vedas if they can't deliver us? See, is that some people... See, the principle is you have to worship... You respect authority and worship those who are in the seat of power. That's the principle. Who are in the seat of power. So, that's supposed to be God. But if you're too materialistic, you're not interested in God. Or even if you are interested in God, you're only interested kind of sentimentally. But the real thing is you want material benefit. So therefore, instead of just endeavoring for it yourself, which would be sinful, impious, you approach the demigods. Because they are empowered with the potency of God. They are God's arms in the universal form. So they're not directly God, but they carry some of the potency of God. So in this way, indirectly, you're worshiping the Lord. You don't know it. Therefore, you don't get spiritual benefit. But you become elevated. You become pious. So a pious person may surrender to the Lord. May not, but may surrender. While an impious person generally won't. So that's why it's recommended. Then if you can't worship God, okay, then worship the demigods. You know, if you can't worship the demigods and all that, then you worship Brahman. Like that. So some form of the Lord, either his personal form or his as the super soul or as Brahman or, you know, his potencies in the demigods, you know. Or at least you respect your mother and father, you know. The father represents Prajapati, you know, mother like this, sister like this, daughter like that. All the demigods are represented even in the family members. So at least somewhere you accept the authority of the potency that's come from the Lord. Like that. You know, it's just like you're indebted. You should be grateful to God. He's taking care, he's giving you everything and all that. And then the devotees who then bring us into devotional service and things like that. So we should be indebted, but we're not. So therefore, then at least you have to be indebted to the demigods because they're running the show. You want air, you want light, you want water. They're giving it. So you owe them a debt. Right? How to live. You learn from the Shastra. You learn from the sages. Right? So therefore, then you owe to the sages. the Brahmins. The Brahmins teach you, the sages are there, the Brahmins teach you, so you owe a debt to them, right? You owe a debt, your parents gave you birth, you have a body, with no body you can't perform any material activities. So they've given you the body, but where did their body come from? Their parents, where did their body, their parents, so the forefathers. Like this, then you have, then so many things, demigods are running things, but a lot of the small little things are taking care of all kinds of ghosts and yakshas, rakshasas, all these antariksha people. Like that, you know, little places, like, you know, what goes on at the head of your bed or at the doorstep, you know, you're not going to have Indra standing there. So these little ghosts and stuff, they take care of it. So you owe a debt to them, right? Like that, you know, your whole community and everything that's there, you owe a debt to mankind. Because they're giving you a place. Okay, you study the Shastra, you're born, you do all these things, but where do you fit? You fit into society, they're letting you fit into society. So therefore you owe a debt to man. So these five debts, you have to pay. But actually, Krishna is the forefather. Krishna is the potency of the demigods. Krishna is giving us the directions in the Shastra. Krishna is running everything. He's in every atom, in between every atom. Right? The whole culture, everything's from him. So if you worship him, you've already gone beyond that. You've paid the debt there. You don't have to pay it at the lower. Right? Just like if you have to pay something, you have to pay something, and you would normally go to the counter and pay to the clerk, but you happen to know the officer, right? And that, so you go to him and all that, and say, hey, give it to me, I'll take care of it. You don't have to go to the clerk, it's already taken care of, because you deliver to him, therefore you don't have to deliver to these others. So the whole Veda, the whole thing, it just like opens and closes. We have these original principles that are there in Brajavrindavan. And then those open out into Mathura, Dwarka, Vaikuntha, into the heavenly planets, into the earthly planet, the lower planets. You know, and at the other end you have hell. But it's all opening from there. So someone who knows the science can open it or close it. Because you know the principles on which it is functioning. Right? Respective authority, and then you have from God all the way down to, you know, respecting your mother, right? Respective authority starts with your mother. She's your first authority, right? Then if you accept her as authority, then you see if she's following the Vedic culture, she's respecting the father, you know? Then you see, okay, mother's my authority. Little kid only knows the mother. Then she's, you know, there's this guy around, the father. But then from the mother, you find out this is father. And then, you know, what father says, that's the way things go in the house. Right? So then it's there. Then you start to observe father. Then you see father has his authorities. You know, he's working under someone in the community or in some variety of hierarchy. So then there's bigger social authorities. And there's who runs the government. Like this, and then you have the emperor, like this, and then you have the spiritual line. And then from there, that same principle of authority, then, you know, through the teacher, the spiritual teacher, and then to the acharyas, to the previous acharyas, to Krishna. So the whole parampara system starts, you know, I mean, that side it's called Raganuga. Down here we call parampara, and then here it's just respective authority. It's the same principle. It just seems to transform as it comes down. So if you don't respect your mother, or mother doesn't respect father, or father doesn't respect his authorities, then there is no parampara for that child. For them it'll be very difficult. For them it'll be intellectual. They'll accept it intellectually, right? Just like the devotees, when they join as adults, generally intellectually they accept the parampara. But if something goes wrong, why did God allow this to happen? Or why did the temple president do this? Or why did the husband? Or why did the father? Or why did... Because there is no real respect for authority. Right? Pious people, generally, it's not like that. Something happens, it's just the way it was. It wasn't... Maybe it shouldn't have been like that, but just... That's the way it works. And others will say, well, why don't you exercise your free will? You know, step out, stand up for your rights. But then you destroy everything. Then there's only you. There's you and nothing. There's no, where's your connection to anything else? So there's basic principle. If that's not in place, that whole principle doesn't work. So then it's hard to surrender to guru. It's hard to surrender to husband. It's hard to surrender to temple authority. It's hard to surrender to a teacher. It's hard to surrender to anything. You know, and ultimately it's hard to surrender to Krishna. Because this whole principle is not in place. Guru not following the culture. Not knowing and not following, not being trained. So such simple things are just naturally in place in the Vedic culture, even though people don't know it. The Hindus themselves don't even understand. But this is what's going on. That's why the name guru is given even to the parents. Mother's guru, father's guru, you know, teacher is guru, even if he's teaching you material things. Then there's the teacher teaching you the Veda. Then there's the teacher teaching you the meanings of the Veda. Right? Like that. Then there's Krishna who's teaching the teachers. So this whole parampara is that. Therefore, they're all called guru. Krishna is the Adi Guru. Right? At that end. And at this end, then is the mother. And then in between, you have a whole lot. So it's one principle, guru. You don't accept one of them, you don't actually accept any of them. Because if it's there, you understand the principle. Because if you accept guru, then, you know, on the spiritual side, you don't have to separate the person and the position, because there's perfection. In the material world, sometimes the position and the person may not always ideally match. Right? The teacher does something they shouldn't, like Dronacharya did something he shouldn't, Ashwatthama did something he shouldn't, Kripacharya, Bhishma. But you see, the Pandavas never gave up dealing with them as guru. Right? Bhima was a little fired up, Draupadi in the beginning, but then when she saw him, then, yeah, here's the son of our teacher. He represents the teacher. So the person may do nonsense, but the position is another thing. One has to be, if one accepts that, then one can do, okay, this temple president doesn't behave, but his position can't be given up. Right? If it's so bad that it's better, like Venu. Venu was not a great king, but he knew how to manage. So therefore, he was better than nothing, because no management is terrible. Anarchy is absolutely destructive. So better him than nothing. But then when it became so bad that now he's starting to undermine the whole Vedic system, like stopping sacrifices and this and that and harassing Brahmins, cows like this, then this is too much. As long as he may not improve the system, but if he maintains it, okay. You know, temple president shows up at 9 o'clock, does the main, you know, does all the accounts and does all this and that, and the temple runs. Okay, nothing's going on dynamic, but it's happening. Okay, it's better than nothing. Right? But if then he doesn't do that, he doesn't do something, then it's time to remove and put someone else. So the position carries authority. Who's in the position, that's another thing. They're supposed to come up to the standard. So there's how we view it and how the other person views it. This is important. The Vedic always makes these two distinctions. The Western doesn't so much. It's they merge them. It's a difficulty. You don't like the person, you don't like the position, right? You didn't like your mother, you don't like the authority. Or some authority disturbed, then all authorities. It's But you find in India a little bit different, because they're a little closer to the Vedic. So they may like a person, but not like others. Like, okay, they you know, some devotees came, burnt them out like that. But as one devotee they knew before, they liked them. So even though they won't go to the temple, won't have anything, won't give any, but they'll deal with that devotee, because they don't put the two together. This person's a nice individual, I like him, and he's a devotee. And then the society, this, that, so many things they can talk about. So you see, one has to be able to separate. Because then there's some chance. This person likes this one devotee. From there you could grow the whole tree back again. But if they throw the whole thing out, then what's their chance? So that's why, is even though they don't accept the whole process and don't surrender to Krishna completely, then they should surrender to some portion of Krishna. There should be something surrendered. Even the person is just a gross materialist. and he's just infatuated with, you know, his wife and his children and his money and his house. If he's doing that according to how Krishna says a grihastha life should be followed, according to the Vedic rules, that's better than nothing. Because at least it's human. It's not animal. It's not very glorious. But from there, you could introduce something else. They do accept authority, right? You take a Kali Bhakta, right? Nasty, does all kinds of things, a terrible behavior and terrible interfacing with other people. Very proud, very ignorant. But they accept the principle of guru authority, what guru says, guru nishtha is there, scriptures are there, they accept the scriptures, you know, these kind of, there's a ritual, the ritual then is, must be performed. They're very fixed in those. So the problem is not that they're, the problem is just they have the wrong deity, wrong shastra, and wrong guru. But the principles of guru, shastra, and the worship, those are proper. That they are small and the deity is big, they want something, they go to the deity. Even though they're going for all kinds of material things, you know, they go for, you know, whoever a head I touch will crack into 10,000 pieces. So it's nonsense, useless. But it's at least they accept that by following a process of austerity, I'm going to propitiate the deity and the deity will give me the blessing. So that's better than nothing. That's better than I'll do it myself. That's better than I'll do it myself. Therefore, you see, is even those who are big materially, they do have respect for authority and this and that. Though they may, the top authority, they don't. Like Hiranyakashipu was very nice to his mother. Right? He dealt with her very nicely. He never dealt with her badly. God is another thing, but at least his mother is. So the principle is something, right? That's why he wasn't such a bad guy, right? His mother, you know, he liked his mother. He was a nice guy. So therefore the Vedic culture is like that. So one understands this principle, it's not bewildering at all. So therefore, as devotees, as a mature devotee, it doesn't bother us if someone wants to worship Hanuman or someone wants to go to Vaikuntha or someone wants to be a Nimbarka or Vallabha. We don't care. Like that. They're just, but they'll go to a certain place. They like that place, they want to go, they're fine. But if they want to go to a, you know, the highest place, that's another thing. But we have no, what they're, it's perfect. It's not that it's Maya, nonsense. Right? Sometimes devotees will say, only ISKCON devotees can go back to Godhead, everybody else won't. No, others will go. But where back to Godhead is another thing. Under who? Right? We want to be standing behind Prabhupada. Right? We want to know the Krishna that Prabhupada knows. We don't want to know another Krishna. That's the point. Prabhupada sees a particular Krishna. We want to know that Krishna. We don't want to know another Krishna. So you want to stand behind someone else? We don't mind. You see Krishna, okay. But that's not what the mood we want to see Krishna in. Right? The gopis see Krishna in one way. Radharani sees in another way. Mother Jashoda in another way. So we want to see in a particular way. We want to see how Rupa Goswami sees standing behind Sri Prabhupada. That's how we want to see it. If someone wants to stand behind someone else, we don't care. What they'll see is different. But this is what we want to see. So therefore, it's not a problem. And then one can see how it unfolds and how it folds back up. It means everything is in Brajavrindavan. Because that's the original. Swayam Krishna is there, and the Surup Shakti, is Radharani, is there. The complete everything is there. From there, it's expanded. So therefore, the nature part of the nature of Krishna is there in Dwarka, or in Vaikuntha, or in the material. Part of Radharani is there. It all comes down. It all works like that. So even you want money, you want Lakshmi, still you have to follow the principles that are favorable to Radharani. But not in Vrindavan, in the material. But if you don't deal properly, Lakshmi is not going to be there. right? The feminine nature is there, whether it's there or here. It's the same, right? But the difference is that to please Krishna, and then it comes down, and then it comes down to please yourself. So actually then Lakshmi, who gives money, the goddess of... See, there's two goddesses. Many, but there's a thing. You see it in one of the letters in the BTG. Someone is asking how Drupadi is the goddess of fortune, because she's married, you know, the Pandavas. So, you know, Lakshmi is the wife of Vishnu. So that's when you're on the transcendental platform. But then people want Lakshmi without Narayan. Right? Most people are interested in that Lakshmi. Right? But still, that's an expansion of the transcendental Lakshmi. Because Lakshmi's Lakshmi. Right? Like you had Maya Sita, and then you had the original Sita. But you see, when Hanuman goes to Maya Sita, then, you know, she deals in everything just like the original Sita would. Right? So for Ravana is different, but for Hanuman is the same. So therefore, there is a form, Dana Lakshmi, the one that everybody is always having there, you know, holding two lotuses and plenty of the nice gold coins falling out of her hands into your pocket, like that. And you can look everywhere in the picture, you will not find Narayan, you know, so it's a perfect opportunity to, you know, jump on this and exploit, you know, like that. So that's not Vishnu's Lakshmi. That potency of Lakshmi, Dana Lakshmi, is invested in Indrani, Indra's wife. Right? So they, the Pandavas, they were previously Indras. And she is Indrani. Therefore, very natural for them to be married. Right? So that potency is there. But a devotee takes that Lakshmi, and when they take that Lakshmi, they're dealing with the original Lakshmi. Because the original Lakshmi only has expanded as this Lakshmi. But when the materialist grab her, then they only have that. They only have Maya. They have Maya Lakshmi. So it'll take them away from Krishna. But the devotees grab the same coin, right? And then it's the original Lakshmi. So then that elevates them. Because then they use the money in Krishna's service. So there's these... It's a very subtle thing. That's why we don't worship the demigods, but we respect the demigods. Sometimes that we don't worship them, then we disregard them. No, we respect them. Like that, because it's Krishna's potency. But there's no need to deal with them. We can deal with them as devotees. But worshipping them as demigods, there's no need. There's no use. Does that make sense?
You're saying that Guru cannot be two, it's one.
No? Guru cannot be two.
It's one.
Yeah. It means the principle of Guru is one.
Yeah.
But, you see, is that you also have to, as you're coming down, then you sometimes need to be able to intellectually sometimes separate the person and the position. His position must always be respected. Even if the person is behaving badly, the position cannot be disrespected. It's against etiquette. Position can. And etiquette-wise, you don't disrespect any person. So therefore, there's no room for bad behavior. It doesn't mean that you may not approach other authorities to try to correct the situation. It's felt that this authority isn't behaving nicely. Right? Temple president doesn't... You go to the GBC. But you can't... It's because they behave badly, it doesn't mean that you can behave badly.
But the disciple also developed that. When the disciple surrendered to the Guru, he also developed his nature, isn't it? He surrendered to the Guru.
Yes.
According to his nature, the disciple also developed his nature.
Yeah, he develops the nature of the Guru, but it depends on what he's associating with. See, you develop the nature that you associate with. So if you see good qualities, that's what you gain. You see bad, that's what you gain. That's why it's not good to criticize. If we criticize, then we have a tendency to develop those qualities. Because you associate what you associate with, you become. So if you're criticizing, you know, you sit around this president, this authority, that. That's your association, bad qualities of authorities. So therefore, you will develop those same qualities. You know, that's your association. You're not taking others. You associate with a Vaishnav, and you sit on the front steps there in front of the Samadhi. And what do you talk about? This authority, this, that authority, that. So you're not associating with them on another level. So in their association, you're gaining that. So those things are what is cultivating the heart. So then that's what one gains.
I have experience with the previous gurus.
But at the same time, as you see that people following the previous gurus advanced. So that's the point, is that there's the individual and then there's the other person. And unless you can separate those two also, the system can't be operated. Right? It's just like this. I should feel humble and be tolerant and respect others. So that every individual does that. And if every individual does that, it's very nice. But sometimes you get these self-appointed, you know, testers of everybody else's patience and tolerance and humility. And they come around and harass just to see if you are following your duty of being humble and tolerant and nice. I've experienced it. You write on, you know, somebody that busts in Bengal, and people start harassing you like anything. And then if you get angry, you say, you're a sadhu, why are you getting angry? You're supposed to be humble. Lord Chaitanya says, I've had it happen. And not once, many times. They're testing to see, are you a real sadhu? But what's their business? It's not their business. So they're taking the same point. You know, so you're supposed to be humble. You know, like Durvasa. Self-appointed. He comes around and he hears someone is very humble. He goes there and tests. You know, comes there and says, you know, I'm very hungry. Like that, you know. Oh, yes, please, come eat. I also have a few people with me. Oh, how many people? 10,000. Okay. Like that. And says, okay. Then they go on work and get everything ready. And then he goes, I'm going to go take my bath now. And so then you have to wait. Everything's getting cold. And he goes and takes his bath. Since he's there taking his bath, it's a wonderful day, standing in the river. Then we'll chant extra mantras, extra prayers, and I'm not so hungry now, so we'll sit and have some satsang on the bank and this and that. Then he'll come back later, you know, many hours later, 4 or 5 hours later. Eating now, it's not the right time, evening sandhya, this and that. I won't eat now. So then you figure, oh, okay. Then you put everything away and all that. You go and take rest. Then at midnight he sends his man, I'm hungry, where's the food? You said you were going to feed me. You invited me as a sadhu, you haven't fed me, I've been here all day, where's the food? And he does that. He does it on purpose. Just to test. And you see, if you fail, you get a bad reaction. But if you pass, he gives great, wonderful benedictions. He gives very nice benedictions if you pass. If you don't, then, you know. So this is not important in the society of Vaishnavas. Is that you know what your position is, you do it. And it's not your business to see that everybody else is doing their thing. Unless it's your job. You're the temple, then it is your job. You're the teacher, then for your students it's your job. You're the parent for your children, it's your job. Then you see, for your dependents, then yes, then you can take the reverse side of the point. But otherwise you take your own. Otherwise it's, for the guru, he sees his guru is liberating the disciple. I'm not liberating the disciple. My guru is liberating, because it's his instructions, his example. I simply take that and give it to the disciple, because it's his, it works. So my guru is saving. My guru is saving my disciple. Right? And the disciple thinks my guru is delivering me because he's giving me the instructions of the previous acharyas. He is connecting. He is doing all this. He's taking the time and endeavor for me personally to do this. Right? So then that's proper. Then the whole system works. Now if the guru thinks I am delivering the disciple, yes, my instruction is so good, then he is delivered by a proper disciple. He won't deliver the disciple, because the disciple properly follows the guru and sees the guru as my deliverer. That disciple will deliver his own guru, because he's following the process. The process works. That's the thing. The process works. It's not that because guru is bad, now the process doesn't work. Process works. Right? If it was connected and proper parampara and everything, then it works. Even if guru is not working. Otherwise, how is it devotees? The guru falls, goes to this, and they're still advancing. Why? Because they're still good disciples. Right? It works. But then when it's understood, there's some problem here, and their instruction doesn't really give, they're not representing Prabhupada, then that instruction's not taken. Right? But the seat of guru is not rejected. This person is not qualified now to be on that seat. But the seat itself is never rejected. So one has to be able to distinguish these things. Then there's less problem. Right? Because if we work simply on the emotional, mental platform, then there always will be a problem. So that's why intelligence is also important. Right? In the conditioned stage. The intelligence is important to see, discriminate, bring everything into focus and balance. But if it's too much intellect, then it's dry. It's not balanced. And it's too much emotion. Therefore, philosophy and religion must be balanced. Then it's complete. Is that okay? Just thinking, it's getting late. If someone wants to ask, otherwise tomorrow, means that you can ask tomorrow. Because the points tomorrow are not much different from today.
That's the one thing, different thing about it, because when we develop my nature, you go back home to God.
Yeah. We can bring that up tomorrow. We should end now. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki, yeah. Samaveta bhakti vrinda ki, yeah. Jainita gaura premanandi.